I started an investment bank that was intended to be a financial software developer. And if you look at the transactions that I had done on Wall Street, I was trying to take that transaction that would have taken a 6-month process with 25 people and get it down to 2 to 4 people for 5 months, and then five to eight for 2 months. So I was trying to cut the, oh yeah, I was trying to basically completely change both how you would design. So let me give you an example. The first thing we did, we were responsible to help sell $10 billion of mortgages for the Federal Housing Administration. And I said, we're not going to sell them. First, we're going to sit down and we're going to write a design book. And it was an online process with, different field offices and different offices and different groups involved in the regulatory process. It's about a 200 people ultimately that did the first design book. And I said that the design book is going to be designed so that 10 college kids could come in and do a $1 billion mortgage auction seamlessly just from the design book. So
So the design
basically,
book was the basically the teaching or the principles, your crash course?
well, here's no, here's what it was. It basically, what happened was we had a design process where we said, okay, we broke it down into the component steps, and then we said, what are the options? In each step, there were many different options. And so the first part of the design book was defining the different options and then the pros and cons of the different options and then choosing an option. And this was very important because every option in a political environment or a financial environment, is imperfect. And you're trying to optimize as opposed to achieve perfection. And it's very important to be able to say when you implement and somebody comes in and says, well, you did this wrong, and say, well, we knew that would be wrong, but this is why this way we did it was the best of the five options. And in a political environment, that is essential to make sure that the deal succeeds. Does that make any sense? So it'd be less important in what you're doing.
Okay.
Anyway, but we ended up with a 2,000-page design book on the first one. We ended up with about 10 different design books, but we put it online so that all the bidders could read it, and it meant there was much better communication. And then what we did was we pre-engineered the databases on the assets, and we put everything online, both on the internet and through Bloomberg. And we were able to bring the cost of due diligencing a deal from about a quarter of $1 million down to about $100.
Whoa,
Right.
this is
And
beautiful,
it
beautiful.
blew open the market because suddenly you had guys in Hong Kong who could lob in a bid. Do you know what I mean? And
Man.
it completely shifted the pricing in the markets in radical, radical ways. And I learned an awful lot about, transparency can improve financial performance, but remember, what you find if you work as a regulator in the federal government, what everybody wants you to do is to protect their knowledge from competition. So they're trying to get you to protect them from creative destruction. And of course, information technology is the ultimate in sort of creative destruction. Anyway, now, so what I discovered, I had two generations. One generation was sort of software developers who were used to functioning in flat organizations where you shared knowledge. And then I had investment bankers and real estate developers who were used to hoarding knowledge and getting value by hoarding that knowledge. And the question was, how do you get these? One we called Ninja Turtles, the other we called Lone Rangers. So the question was how to get the Ninja Turtles and the Lone Rangers to work together. And I finally developed one of the associates, or one of the deputies at HUD, used the MIT Project Management Software System, and this is how it was described to me. Okay, so write down five initials, RSIVB. Okay?
RFIZZ.
R as in red. S is in Sam, I is in input, V is in Victor, B is in boy.
Oh, okay, VB, okay.
Okay, the R is the person who is responsible. The S is support. The I is input. The V is veto. Okay? And each one of these can be constrained by hours. So I'm responsible, but I only am committing 5 hours. Or I will support, so the R is the project manager or the, you know, the air traffic controller. They're responsible that the function gets done on time and budget. But they may not have enough hours to do it by themselves. So somebody, let's say you're in charge and two people show up to help you and they commit to give you 8 hours of S in a design sprint each. Okay. And that means you get to direct, you know, what they do and how they do it. Oftentimes you'll find somebody who's a project manager who's an R and they have people helping, but there's expertise they need from a whole series of different fields. They need to make sure it works, you know, that the tractor works for the people who own the land and this and that and this and that, you know, where it works with soybeans. And so you get a variety of different people with different knowledge that needs to be coordinated, and they agree to be an I to give input in the design. And that can also be constrained by time. So let's say three people agree to give 2 hours of I to make sure that whatever it is has the benefit of those different pots of expertise or experience or points of view.
Right.
Okay, so the V is a veto. And a veto can be time sensitive or not, which is you get a veto till Friday, but if you don't exercise your veto by Friday, you lose it. Or it can be not time sensitive. So, for example, let's say you have a design sprint involving three aspects. Okay, aspect one, aspect two, aspect three. Mm-hmm. And you appoint three people to be the project manager of those three different aspects. Okay, and then they have various, and you may say, look, I need to have a veto on the final design. So they each produce a design, and you say, well, I need to have a V before it goes into the village construction set. Mm-hmm. And that way you can delegate all of that, not worrying that they're going to come up with something you can't live with. Because you have a V.
I would hold the veto?
Yeah, as... Whoever holds the veto when you set the project up. What's important is when you start, before anybody invests any time or emotional energy, mm-hmm. what's important is to be absolutely clear about what the powers and authorities are. Now, here's why I found, and I haven't explained the B, but I'll explain that in a second. Here's why I found this to be so valuable to these kinds of projects and sort of integrating the Lone Rangers and the Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. So I'll use a mortgage auction as an example. So you have the initial design, you have the knowledge management, you have the relations with the clients, you have the marketing, you have the closing. Okay, so there's a couple, or you have the bid management. Okay, now, I may put Harry as the R on the design phase. And now let's say I'm the CEO of the company, so I'm running this, I'm responsible to the client, so I'm the overall R. I make Harry the R on the design, but it turns out Harry needs 2 hours of I from me on the design phase. So I commit 2 hours of I to Harry on the design phase, and in the design phase, I work for Harry. Now,
okay.
I may be the overall R, but for that part of the project, I work for him, I report to him.
Right.
And he can say, no, you have to do this, or no, you have to do that.
Yeah.
And so I could break down roles and responsibilities in very granular ways. And oftentimes we would have people who on one phase, you know, I was working for you on this phase, on the next phase, you're working for me. And we can all be very clear about that because it can be defined in writing up front. We can be clear why. It can be constrained by time. And we can let the place rip because anybody who needs a veto for risk management or quality control issues can define it up front, get it, and that can all be negotiated up front. And what we would find is the negotiation of the RSIV, the times, the vetoes, you know, that could take a, you know, that could be a big investment of time. But once we got it all negotiated out, we went like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah.
And very egotistical people or people with very different styles could work effectively. The other thing we discovered is we had to have a balance of Myers-Briggs profiles. Now, different people use different tests. I don't know if you know Myers-Briggs.
Yeah.
We had to have a balance. If we had a team where one of the components, the eight components, was missing, there'd be a problem. Because either the only, what we found was, if the team had 100% of the expertise they needed to do the job, they could muddle through without balance. But if they didn't have the knowledge they need and they had the balance, they would figure out that they were missing knowledge, figure out what it was, and go get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, yeah. Anyway, so here's what the B was. The B did not come from MIT project management. It came from us. Now, we were dealing in a much more politicized environment because we were doing billion-dollar deals in the middle of Washington that people said couldn't be done. A B is the person who agrees beforehand to take the blame if anything goes wrong.
Oh.
And what we found was the speed of operation went much faster if we designated an official B beforehand.
Huh.
So in a situation where, you know, there's sensitivities for that reason or they're outsiders or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I think in your environment you need it less, but...
Wow.
But and the problem...
This is a much longer discussion. I mean, there's a whole discussion about the dynamics of working with staff, volunteers, global communities. I'm going in through deep waters here.
Yeah, volunteers take a lot of time. You need a lot of management time to manage them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's very wide discrepancy with people who can plug into can plug and play in collaboration and people who can't. And mm-hmm. and that's where you have to be careful, because what happens is you're in a situation, I think the economics of time are very much as they were for me. And that is that in a team of 20 people, one person who's not productive in that environment can destroy the whole team.
Yeah.
And so you have very low tolerance for what's called bad dogs.
Or bad seeds, like the poison.
Well, and some of it is not, you know, some of it is not... that they're not emotionally, you know, so sometimes you run into problems because they're emotionally immature, but sometimes they're just not skilled at collaboration or good at it. So, it,
right,
you know,
right.
But you what you need is a screening process, you know, so people can't get in, because the thing that will kill you is if you have 19 productive people and you keep letting that one person in, then the 19 will give up and go away.
No, yeah. You're talking about some relevant things. Yeah, I'd like to have a longer discussion with you on this sometime, yeah.
Well, you know, you have my email. You know, I'm going to give me your email address again.
Marchin@opensourceecology.org.
Okay.
What's your schedule like these days? Are you, like, out in the world a lot these days? Or
Here's what I do. I have three businesses. One mm-hmm. is the Solari Report. One is Solari Investment Advisory Services. And one is C-Lane Investment Advisory. And... I'm basically, my business model is as follows.
Mm-hmm.
I do the blog and a whole series of sort of radio shows and online things for free. And then the Solari Report is $275 to $360 a year, depending on whether you do it monthly or annually. Then Solari Investment Advisory Services is a fee-based service. And then C-Lane is a money management where I get a percent. And it's basically a business model where I'm trying to help people basically navigate, you know, my goal is to help them build and protect family health and wealth in this environment, in the world as it is, and but do it in a way that moves us towards a decentralized economy.
Yeah.
And my business model is to make the knowledge available, you know, basically for free. So anything I have, I want to be able to help people for free. But then we have, you know, these different services where the more time of mine you get, you know, than you pay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, but I think, as I said on the, I'm just coming at the different, I'm trying to do the same thing you're doing, but from the other side of the balance sheet.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, when I saw that, when you were basically open sourcing financial workings, I was like, whoa, that's heavy duty.
Yeah.
So you're, it's very refreshing for me to see that you're coming like, you're absolutely not coming from, I mean, from the way I see it, from this hacker open source world, you're in a different world, but you're totally, it seems like you're totally aligned ethically regarding the open source nature of the whole game.
Right. Well, what happened was I was, you know, what we were doing at Hamilton in the Washington in the 90s, that was my company in Washington. You know, basically I discovered the software tools and I said, we can reinvent the world. And not only that, we can develop decentralized capital formation by place. So we can, you know, the problem right now that many places have is a debt model is very destructive of living things. So you have a win-lose relationship between living equity and financial equity. And I said, you know, if we could convert to an equity-based economy locally, then we could have a win-win economy. So
mm-hmm.
I saw the software tools and I said, you know, you can get the learning metabolism within a place to a speed and a level where, you know, we can go free. And
yeah.
That's basically what your tools are doing. You're saying, let's get the learning metabolism to the point where I can have a high standard of living with very little use of my time. You know, you're
right.
Basically trying to kickstart the learning metabolism. So I said, the tools will do it. And what I didn't understand was, obviously, that shifts power relationships. And
right.
Anyway, so
and as far as, so just for to kind of fill you in a little more, I mean, we're doing the Global Village Construction Set as an excuse, but the bigger picture is a generalized method for open product development or open development of anything.
Right.
So that tool set of how you accelerate that innovation radically is, maybe we could have some discussions on that, how what that would look like in terms of implementation right now for us in hardware and just any system.
Wow. Okay.
Is that a discussion you'd like to have? I mean, it seems
listen, here's the discussion I'd like to have. How can I help you?
Wow.
Okay. That's the discussion I'd like to have. You figure out, you know, I kind of feel, I'm a Christian, so I'll use Christian talk to say it. I kind of feel like, you know, everybody, God has a purpose for our lives. God has a purpose for your life. You're
mm-hmm.
living that purpose. I don't need to tell you what it is or how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
What I need to do, you know, if I want to build a decentralized economy, what I need to do is use my tools as an investment banker, an investment advisor, to help entrepreneurs like you
mm-hmm.
figure out the business money side and do what you do.
Yeah. Here's a quick one. Are you familiar with ConnexCorp by any chance?
ConnexCorp?
No. So we had initial discussions about setting up an endowment for OSC, and I think we're kind of like basically holding back as far as myself because we're getting our organization and structures in place. Like, we recently hired a bunch of people and we're just stabilizing to become an authentic organization. But do you think there's an opportunity to set up something like that, some kind of an endowment to make this? Well, I mean, what I'm looking for is to make sure the resources are there to develop the tools. But once they are developed, I don't want to be on welfare. I want to be doing
right.
the earned.
So I think
model.
There is, but one of the things I would encourage you to do
mm-hmm.
is to have a business model where you have multiple sources of revenue and they are individuals. So in other words, you are decentralized in your sources of revenues. And that's why I like the 1,000 True Fans so much.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would love to see you do is build the 1,000 True Fans
mm-hmm.
and then the educational institution, because I think those are very deep, long-lived things. And then
yeah.
and then add the, you know, endowment. It's a chicken and egg thing, which you do first or second, but you want to support yourself at retail, not wholesale. Does that make any sense?
At retail, not wholesale, meaning we're charging real money for our experience.
Or what
that's do you mean
good.
By that?
You are supported by individuals and many of them.
individuals and many of them.
Right. So you're not dependent on an institution that can just change its mind.
Yeah, no, that is becoming very clear to me.
Right. Yep. So the way to have thousands of individual supporters is to charge, you know, is to provide a service. And that's where the education, I think, can make an enormous amount, because most humans need a human contact to learn. It's, you know, they can't just download open source plans and do it themselves. Some can.
Right.
But they like, right. You know, they need a social experience. They need, you know, we should have a whole conversation about morphogenic fields, but they need to plug into the field.
Yeah.
And you need to create, seed, build fields.
Huh. Wow.
So it's a longer road to build that individual support, but it is what will be deep and politically enduring.
Yes. Do you think, so in going back, when you hear me saying this year we're going to develop our techniques further, 2014-15 is accelerated innovation to get the set finished by the end of that, that's a very ambitious goal. Do you think that's realistic, or am I fooling myself?
I don't know. I would need to know more.
Mm-hmm.
And to have sort of seen these things, you know what I have to, the reason I said I would come through when I drive back is, you know, I would love to be around when you do a workshop or a design sprint and understand more, because I don't have a picture in my mind. I think very mathematically.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about something like the question you just asked, mm-hmm. I have a picture in my mind of a sources and uses of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yep.
I think in terms of money and time budgets, and to understand something, I need to be able to simulate conceptually the time budget in my head, and I don't understand enough to be able to do that for what you just asked.
Right, man, this is really good. If this is as good, if this is not too good to be true, I would want to visit you and just continue some of these discussions. This is a lot of relevant stuff for me, and. I don't know if we can spend more time before that. I think, well, I mean, this is extremely exciting for me. I don't know how you feel, but. Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like you're going, you know, right at the heart of what I was going at in the 90s. Now, I've had to back off and do what I can do that's economically, you know, I can only do what's economically viable.
Right.
And but I feel like you're driving to that point, and, you know, so I get a deep satisfaction out of, you know, at least I can help you do that. So so I get some visceral joy out of that.
Yeah. And it's like, for us, yeah, so you're working with the economics, we're redefining them. And that's a,
right.
That's just an exciting
thing. And they
need
to be, redefined.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they need to be redefined.
Okay,
and,
Catherine.
And we're
thank
in
you.
Cahoots.
Yes. Thank you for existing.
Thank you for existing. Bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.